Malcolm, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us on the Daily Program this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Now, this decision revolves around stage two treatment. Could you perhaps tell us what does stage two treatment actually involve?
Yeah, so there are two key stages in this treatment. And the first stage is where puberty blockers are given to minors to stop the onset of biological puberty. And then at about age 16, stage two treatment involves giving gender-affirming hormones such as testosterone or estrogen to encourage the development of physical characteristics in the gender with which the person identifies.
And what are the current laws that actually surround the stage two hormonal treatments for teens?
So it has been a bit complicated, the law in this area, but basically at the moment, the family court requires that stage two treatment is approved by the court if consent is sought from the parents. But the minor themselves, if they're what's called GILIC competent, if they're mature and sufficiently able to fully understand the nature and consequences of their decision, they can also give their own consent, but the court must also determine their GILIC competency, their ability to make that decision.
Mm. Now, this is one that the trans community and their supporters have spoken out against for years, saying that it has some pretty severe impacts on trans teens, and obviously it does slow down the process. I think there's no question about that. So what kind of impacts are we talking about from this court process?
So I just mentioned a colleague of mine, Fiona Kelly from La Trobe University, has done some empirical work in this field, and she's interviewed families and children who have been through this process. So it can quite often result in quite a significant delay in seeking access to services. And of course, at a time when there are psychological consequences of not being able to access the treatment itself for the young person, that delay can be quite significant. Another issue is that in some circumstances, it will be up to the family to fund the application to court. It's quite a burdensome process in that there has to be expert reports for the court available. And in some cases, the families are funding that process themselves. Additionally, I would just mention that there are some concerns about this process in terms of there have been reports in the literature that some young people are accessing hormones from the internet so without medical oversight. So there are some reports that this process is causing, I guess, people to look to other avenues to avert the legal process. And that's obviously not desirable, given that it would be more beneficial to have medical professionals overseeing this process.
Absolutely. Now, as we mentioned before, the judges have reserved their judgment in this particular case, hope to give us a decision sooner rather than later. But given this is an issue that has been talked about for some time, is there any way at this point of predicting an outcome?
That's quite a difficult question. Unfortunately, it is really dependent on how the legal principles in this case are interpreted and applied. If you like, I can quickly give you an overrun of the key legal reasoning and how I think arguably it should go, but I don't know that the full court will necessarily rule in that way.
Mm. Well, I'd appreciate your insight into this one, especially the insight into how a ruling in this particular case might determine cases in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, essentially, this law has come from common law. It's not legislation that requires young transgendered people to seek court approval. It's based on a precedent of the High Court, which required basically that any kind of non-therapeutic treatments that carry a significant risk of making a wrong decision are grave in terms of their consequences, are irreversible and invasive. And there's a potential conflict in terms of the best interest of the child, for the parties who are making the decision. Any kind of treatment such as that is outside the ambit of parental consent. And what happened a number of years ago in a decision called Alex, the family court determined that hormone treatment for, as it was then referred, gender identity disorder, required the oversight of the court. And then what happened a few years back in the decision of Jamie was that the full court of the family court held that stage one of that treatment no longer required court oversight, but stage two did. But in that ruling, they said that the treatment was therapeutic. Now, based on the High Court decision earlier on in Marion's case, which said it was non-therapeutic treatments that require court authorization, people have argued that because this is now recognized as a therapeutic treatment, it doesn't fall within that precedent set in the High Court decision. And therefore, because stage two is also a therapeutic treatment, there should be no need for court oversight any longer. And when you look at the reasoning in the Jamie decision a few years back, they seem to suggest, the full court suggests, that therapeutic treatments do fall within the parental realms of consent. So some people are arguing that based on that reasoning, they should really apply that to stage two treatment as well, which means arguably on those principles, it's likely that the full court will change their view that stage two is something that falls outside of parental consent.
It is a fascinating process. Malcolm, thank you very much. Really do appreciate your time.